Hello, everyone. This is Off Meta Podcast, a podcast about Star Wars, X-Wing, and anything I really care about. I'm Steven, aka Rathos, your host, and today we're joined by Oliver Pocknell. Ollie is the 2019 world champion and the player to hold on to that title for the longest period of time in the game of X-Wing. He is also a core member of the 186 Squadron. That's a British X-Wing group based out of London, I think, right?
Yeah, based out of London. So we started off purely being London-based before I joined. And we started incorporating people around the London area. And at the moment, we've just gone through another little bit of an expansion to sort of take the Firecast and the 186 and merge them together. Mm-hmm. So it's been cool.
Yep. And then the last thing I want to note is that Ollie is the most handsome world champion of the available pool, although that pool is not very big. So...
Nicholas God has much better hair than I do. So,
yeah, but beauty is not one thing. You know,
it can't be
just one thing. You're actually a model for something, right? There was that thing that you did.
I forgot that actually happened. Yeah, so
I didn't forget.
Element did give me. I think they basically just gave me some clothes and were just like, hey, this one was a really weird one because there's a guy in Germany, really, really awesome man, who works for the Element sales department. Mm-hmm. And what Element were doing at the time was they were doing a load of their advertising linked with people from the community who were like, did some cool things. And he was just like, hey, we're doing a Star Wars run. I know this guy who plays this game and runs a school club. And he just happens to be world champion because this was what, like 2 months after I'd won.
Yeah.
And he was just like, we should totally get him on. Just randomly out of the blue, guy calls me. He's like, hey, do you want to do a thing with Element? And I was just like, holy crap, I snowboard. Yes, please. I may have rinsed them for all of their clothes and backpacks.
Yeah. It was really funny. So like from my side, looking out from like an outsider's perspective, right? It was very funny because it's like you win the world championship, big fanfare. Like it's like, because it was a big worlds too. Like the 2019 worlds.
Oh, it was amazing.
Especially because there are people who have like never experienced it at that point. So they came in during the pandemic. Like 2019 worlds was a big deal when it happened because previous to that, all the previous worlds were just kind of like whatever. And so it was a big deal. You took it home in a very exciting finale, right?
Yeah, it was such a good game. Like,
yeah, and then like a month or two later, I'm like, oh, look, like Ollie's like getting featured in like fucking the model and stuff, and it's like, oh, geez, this guy's blowing up, man.
It was an interesting one because like going into it and being like, okay. How the hell did that happen? And second of all, I looked at, and because obviously we had no idea about COVID at the time. So I thought, right, well, I've basically got a year. And I think it was Farmer. I can't remember who I was listening to, but someone on a podcast was like, leave things better than we found it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of stuck me. It's like, right, I'm going to be on a platform for a year. So let's see if I can, you know, make something of this. Like, let's push the game, let's try and encourage people to like be to play, etc., etc. And that one came along. I was like, you know what, screw it, why not? Mm-hmm. And I also managed to get the through randomly Richard Greenway, they got the BBC to come into my school and film me.
Yes, that was the other thing. You had a news article and then you got the modeling thing. You were blowing up. You know what, I think that if COVID didn't happen, Like COVID ruined your professional X-Wing career.
X-Wing was never going to be professional, but I was hoping to push it a bit more, like just get X-Wing a bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. COVID did a lot to kill it. But the flip side is clearly I planned COVID because then I get to be the longest ever reigning world champion.
That's true. It's like you held on to the title for the longest. No one can clearly touch it.
I'm better than Paul and I definitely didn't cheat.
It's not cheating. They didn't decide to have a championship. How can you didn't have a chance to lose your title,
right?
That's not a you.
I have got to say though is I don't understand how Paul managed to like not necessarily win for 3 years in a row, that's an incredible feat in itself, but being on that pedestal for 3 years and having won it repeatedly for 3 years, mm-hmm. and the everything that comes with that, like I've got a lot of respect for him for that, because it's not an easy, like even in the small community that we are relative to mm-hmm. all of these other sports and everything else, it's not the easiest.
What are you saying, that being X-Wing famous is a draining training position to be in?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen that from a lot of people over the last however many, is it's quite difficult to keep up the mojo, shall we say, especially for like community and streaming and everything else. Especially for the last few years, it's been rough. And I think there's been not so much back from the community as there have been before.
Sure, sure. But I mean, so the way that I deal with X-Wing fame is I just pretend that it doesn't exist. So
that helps.
I don't expect anything from it. So when I get stuff, it's great. But I'm just like, Gatsby's so weird though, because I just do it for me. Like,
yeah,
I need the builder. I want to make lists. Right.
You can't imagine if we didn't, like, see what everyone is missing here is that you just have and have had a lifelong feud with Andre for like the last however many years, and yeah. you hate him and everything. Yeah. That's just,
I have like a lot of feuds, honestly. I just, I'm a hateful person, I guess, deep inside. No, I'm, you know what it is? It's like feuds are just fun to have. Like, we just create random competition, and like it creates like fake drama, which is so much fun for everybody.
It really is. And on that note, I mean, fake drama, we're probably going to get the spicy podcast going back up in a bit. I think Sunday I'm going to actually get my button gear and do a little bit of a podcast, because yeah, it's XDC season is coming up and it'll be fun.
Oh, so when it's time to talk shit to other people, that's when you're motivated to podcast and create content.
Exactly. Right. Well, more to the point, Connor is motivated, so I'm coming along for the ride. And we've convinced Liam out of his hole, so buckle up. There's probably going to be some offense and, mild country versus country shenanigans going on. It should be fun.
Can I ask you what's... because I don't have, we have, a fairly big Ontario community, but it's not like what's going over there in the UK, right? Yeah. And so what is that environment like? Because it's very different. Like, obviously you got a bunch of countries literally like in combat with each other. And then there's just the nationalist parts of that just breed in naturally, right? Because even within United Kingdom there's everybody hates, well, as far as I know, everyone hates Wales and
No, the way it generally goes is anyone that isn't England hates England. And that goes for the whole of Europe and Wales, Scotland and Ireland as well. Right. There is a wonderful video. If you ever get the opportunity to watch it, just look up Banned Six Nations advert. Everybody hates England. It's phenomenal. But yeah, we've got a reputation. The Empire came in it and all of that. But in terms of X-Wing around England and Europe, we are lucky. And I think it's starting to build up again, which is really nice. I mean, because I've talked to a lot of people in like Canada and in the States on how long it takes them to get to like their local store, like another tournament. And most of the time it's an hour and a half drive at least just to get to the next store over.
In the US, most of the time, it's like that a lot.
Yeah, most of the time it's 3 hours. So, I mean, for us, from where I'm based in Brighton, there's a store in Brighton, I can walk to it in half an hour if I want to. There is a store in Worthing down the road. There's one in Eastbourne. Those are both half an hour either way. If I go north by half an hour, there's one there. If I go north by an hour and a half, I get to London, and there's about five in that space. Mm-hmm. Basically, within a two-hour drive of my house, I could hit 10 tournaments over the course of maybe like a six-month period, which is really lucky. And then, because if you're in the UK and you live next to an airport, generally flights around England are pretty cheap. Flights around Europe are pretty cheap. So you can do an X-Wing weekend for maybe like, it's under $500, like quite happily under 500. Like,
oh, if you really nice. Go,
if you really go cheap, you can get it for like $300 if mm-hmm. you're like sleeping with four other people on a sofa. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can like, I've gone to, I think at the moment I'm on 15 or 16 countries. I'm countries. Very lucky. Yeah. Whoa, my job has allowed me to do that because I've got the holidays. Yeah. But I've done all of Scandinavia. I've done all of England and Wales and Scotland. And I've done a lot of Europe. I've been playing for 8 years, but mm-hmm. yeah, that's it. It's amazing. Like, to be able to do that. And back in like the 2016 to 2018 period, like just before COVID, and all of that, that was the big bit. Like, that was where you could go anywhere and play. Like, I went on a weekend trip to Norway to play in like a 16 person regional. It was great.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, jealous, obviously, because that's that's nuts. I think because it's like the distance is a big problem for North America, because there's just so many people, but like there's a lot of people, but like we're spread out and quite a bit. And even like within like, so my area, take Toronto, for example, right? Yeah. So Toronto itself, the city of Toronto, is a dead zone. There are actually no stores playing X-Wing at the moment.
Oh, wow.
But is it all of the boroughs, it's just weird right now. It's just a weird scenario. All the boroughs around Toronto, there's like a huge, okay, well, I don't want to go into it. It's basically a huge like whole thing about economics and politics and stuff like that. But so there's the boroughs around Toronto all have a store that you can play X-Wing in, right? So I think we got, so like east, west, we have like south, and then we have a couple of stores like northerish-ish, right? So like in the surrounding area, there's like tons of store champs and tons of stores playing X-Wing, and their communities are growing, right? But Toronto itself is dead. And so it's very annoying, because it's like, if I want to drive out to one of these other things, it's still like an hour, hour and a half, right? I have one nearby, it's like 20 minutes. That's great, right? But like the ideal scenario, it's like, okay, if like, for you guys, if like London had no stores, but everywhere else did.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That'd be a big pain. Yeah. It makes sense. It's just frustrating. It's a weird one, because so we had, it used to be that there was a load more stores. And a lot of places at the moment are stopping stocking X-Wing. But mm-hmm. I mean, the flip side of that is like we're starting to see a lot more stuff. So I mean, like the UK Team Championship is just coming back, which is mm-hmm. awesome. We're getting, I mean, our store has had three new players in the last 2 months, which mm-hmm. is the Brighton one, which is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing people come out the woodwork. And I think the main reason for that is we're getting basically bums on seats, right? You're getting people playing X-Wing in the local group and having a good time. And because mm-hmm. they're having a good time, people are going, oh, this is really cool, and what's going on? And it's now the situation of, I think it's no longer like the company driving sales, because obviously there's been this massive like switcheroo, and like they've been dumped on, and they've now got how many games to manage. They don't have the staff to be pumping out stock on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So it's now a lot more community based, especially around our area. And we're going, okay, well, we want this to continue, so let's build it up. And that was a lot of
that. Let me build up on this a little bit, because this is a hot take theory that I have, right? Mm-hmm. This might be half baked, but I think it actually has a good standing. I think what happened during the pandemic, independent of whatever AMG takeover stuff happened, right?
Yeah.
So I think what happened over the pandemic is there's been a shift in the way hobbyist retail works now because of the pandemic, just in general. And on the shelf, like, so shelf space is not a thing anymore. Right. I think that for the majority of stores, at least that I've seen, like they have like kind of, especially because storefronts have like had to switch to a COVID model, and then they had to like cordon areas off so that people could just do pickups and stuff like that. A lot of the shift has switched to online sales, right? Yeah. And because of that, storefronts are a lot less focused on actually like having a big showcase of showing the different games, and people was walking in. consumer behavior also changed during the pandemic, so that like this whole like, oh, let me see what's on Board Game Geek and stuff like that, if I'm a board game enthusiast or a game enthusiast, let's see what's cooking, and then going out and find the thing, watching YouTube videos of stuff that like they might be interested in, that kind of stuff is like drastically shifted over the last 3 years. And we're only now starting to see the effects of that. And it used to be that I thought, oh man, like if people are not stocking X-Wing, that's like a big problem. But that's not how I feel anymore. It's kind of weird. I kind of feel like, I don't think if X-Wing came, I think we're seeing the same thing with Shatterpoint. I don't know why I couldn't like place that, but with Shatterpoint, it also wasn't getting a lot of shelf space, I don't think, right? Yeah. Like, but it was the sales are doing good, and according to the AMG Discord, it is number one or number two in terms of popularity, right? So if that's the case, then I really feel strongly that the survival of X-Wing doesn't depend on whether or not the stores have stock. It's more about, because I think everyone can get X-Wing if they want it, right?
Yeah. There's second hands, it's online. Like you can buy a lot of stuff from the companies, you can buy a lot of stuff from stores. They just won't be having it in stock.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just like walk in and get it. But I think that buying behavior has just changed overall in general. And that trend will continue. As I also think it for a lot of brick and mortar stores, it actually doesn't make sense for them to warehouse and store a lot of materials as well. It's lower overhead for them. And they're getting squeezed on the sales side as well. So like they need to cut their margins somewhere, and they need to start like finding a way to save money and become sustainable in this post.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, cause this is where it's super interesting, cause the stores that are surviving and thriving right now tend to be the ones with two types of business models. I'm not an economist or anything like that, but what we've noticed, and the ones that were doing really well and ran through COVID, are the ones that have turned themselves into proper cafes. Because obviously it used to be the whole like, oh yeah, support your friendly local gaming store, like go down and buy your game, or like be it comics, cards, whatever it is, you buy it from your local store. And that's, I think that's changing now. It's basically, instead of buying from your local store, when you play, buy a coffee from your local store. Like make their money on, like, because for them, the food is so much more value than the board games most of the time.
Yes.
Like you spend
margins on board games are crap.
Right. Like, so you actually, it's better for them to say, all right, we're going to mostly be a food cafe with gaming space, and you can pay fairly cheap rates to be here because we know that you're going to buy a pizza, or you're going to buy like a cake and a coffee or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I'd say is like, as you said, like it doesn't make too much of a difference if it's transitioning to online, but what you do need to do is now make sure that one, you go and play in your stores, because that keeps the stores alive and gives you places to play. But two, it makes you visible, and like whatever game you're playing, be that Shatterpoint, be that X-Wing, be that Legion, because I know that Legion's blowing up still. Yeah, I think just be there, and that's something that I've been bad at recently, but I know that my local scene is getting better. The London scene is growing again as well, which is great to see. And I think it's something to, we've ended up in, as opposed to having the individual little corners, which we had before COVID has given us one big bubble where a lot of us talk all over the world, and there's always someone to complain. If you want to complain about something, there'll be always someone that you can complain with. So I think a lot of it that we forget is actually, you know what, it's quite fun to go down and just do some PP.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. I think that the model switching to some sort of like eating based stuff, like some sort of like meal based, like, cause it's like, it's good synergy with kind of like having people sitting out at the table, they're playing games. And you also want to force people out of their kitchens, right? Like for the game stores, right? Like, the more exposure they have to the store, the more likely they are to put in orders for product, the more likely they are to see other stuff. And it's always been a problem for stores, I think. The idea that like, oh, I'm going to sell products and then open up space, which is just taking up 90% of the time, it's not being used for anything, right? It's, you're paying rent on it, you're paying gas and electricity on it for the square footage. If you own the building, then you're paying rent on it, not rent, a tax on it, right? And it's not being utilized 90% of the time. Realistically, it's like in other industries, this would be event space, right? And so what you want to do is have it booked out as much as possible, right? And the best way for them to do that is tournaments and stuff like that, have people in seats. And then, but then utilitarian wise, it's still not preventing any potentially any revenue. Like, you know, if you have a tournament, you have an entrance fee, then it's generating a little bit of revenue, but that margin is so low for the amount of time per hour for the space, right? So having a cafe model, like, to me makes the most sense. Like, it's just like, yeah, it's just like a natural kind of transition of like, yeah, you should do this because this is how you're going to be a sustainable business. Like it, with like maximizing the resources that you have, especially knowing that the hobby thing that you're getting to, and let's be real, if you're running a hobby store, chances are you're not doing it because you want to make a ton of money, right? Like this is a passion project. It's
normally a labor of love. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like the, cause like the, in our area, we have one store that is basically an online retailer that is like, so it's grown so crazy as an online retailer that it has like a huge warehouse store in like one of the suburbs. Right. And then like a downtown store, which is their 2 points of sale. Right. But, and that's done well. And all the other stores have basically switched to this cafe model as well. Right. Or they've gone out of business. Right.
Right.
And yeah, it's, I'm kind
I don't know. I'm just looking at this and transitioning into AMG a bit. Mm-hmm. Because the other kind of store that, or more to the point, the cafes that have survived have also survived because normally because they're Big Magic or Pokemon or like whatever card game is selling, right?
Yeah.
And they're doing draft nights.
Yeah.
And because that is, I mean, that's a huge income for the store, is buying in the cards, the players come, they go for the evening. I'm really curious about this for AMG purposes. And I personally, I think that we're getting to the point where if the game, like model wise, is complete and all they're looking to do is bring out new cardboard, why not focus on bringing out cards? Why not turn this into a rotating format where you just go, okay, like, if you want to go down the quick build route, if they're doing all these quick build cards, you bring out a quick build card, and then a year later or 2 years later, you bring out a new quick build card and the old one disappears. And you just say, all right, if you're playing tournaments, you have to have the most up-to-date quick build card, and that allows a rotation.
Yeah.
It means that people keep on buying product. You don't have to buy ships, which is great for all the old players. It's great for the new players because there'll just be a ship in a box with no cards with it. And you can buy the ship, which is cool, with like the base card. And then you could also, if you want to do tournaments, you then you buy the tournament pack and you've got a load of quick build cards in there or something like that. I just feel like it's super cheap to print cardboard. You don't have to have any design costs or anything like that. You just go, okay, like just rotate abilities and go, cool, here is a new ability for this thing.
I think that it definitely is an interesting concept from a, for a, because so here's the thing, right? These are all new business models essentially for AMG, right? Like, and there's a lot that goes into it outside of just a designer spec of like, okay, well, blah, 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 we do this, we do that, right? Like they need to commit to like, okay, well, what's the ROI? How does it affect our bottom line? What's the, like, there's a lot of stuff they have to do to like, to mitigate that. And in general, these industries tend to be change averse, right?
Yes.
And so would something like this be great? Yes, I agree. I actually love that format. I love the format idea. I love the idea that like, okay, the tournament kit has a bunch of the quick builds in it. So you have to either like include that as a part of the thing, or it makes it easier for you to come into a tournament because you don't have to necessarily bring the cards. You just have to bring the ships. And if stores have the ships available already, right? Like even if it's just the regular expansion pack, right? Then you could literally buy the ship at the store, add the quick build card to your thing, and then you just, and it's like it helps with sales, it does a whole bunch of stuff, and you can, and like if the turnaround was fast enough on cycles, I think someone said 3 month cycle on like from design to print for cardboard, right? Theoretically. So and obviously, you know, we don't know what their full like, you know, output is like, but like I think that's what they do for their OP kits, right? Is basically they design it, and then 3 months later, it's ready to go to worldwide, right? And they've had problems with that too. So distributing is tough. So let's not like pretend. Let's pretend it's 6 months, right?
Yeah.
So you have an idea, and you with 6 months you can have a turnaround, right? It also means your worst selling items, you could theoretically be like, okay, the Thai Striker isn't selling at all. It's not coming off of shelves. So let's make this like really cool Thai Striker, put it into our tournament format, run that for our next store champ season as like, this is the thing that you can include. Yeah. Everyone buys Strikers if they didn't already own one, right? Or you have a reason to buy a Striker now, right? Now you're using the tournament format to drive sales, and it's like helping your bottom line. There's a lot of synergy there. I hope AMG is listening to this, because like this is like great. We'll give it to you. We don't need any points on this. Like just go ahead and do it. Like this is yours now. This is a great idea for a format, right? Like, and you know, obviously there's design work that has to go into it, but like in terms of what it can do, I think it's really, really interesting, right? So the challenge is like, would they do it? I don't know. Is it interesting from the bottom line enough to consider it? I don't know. Even if they did it, could they get approval to make these things happen on a like quick enough turnaround to like be practical? Don't know. And does it fit into their existing release schedule? Because we do know that the actual like thing, the actual models are 2 to 3 years, right? Like, so whatever they made, we're only starting to see that stuff now. And I assume that the reason they did, okay, this is a conjecture, fully conjecture, right? I assume the reason why we have only seen reprints up until now of like new AMG stuff is because the reprint stuff is easy to turn around from a design perspective, right?
Right. So that was my thinking too, because if you're doing reprints, you don't have to remake a model. You can just go, okay, I'm just dealing with cardboard. And because I'm just dealing with cardboard, it's easy to get past LFL. And it's a lot easier to make and rehash and bring out. So
the model thing is a big problem, because it's like just a year of development just to get the model to the printers and the printers to get the pipeline. There's a ton of problems, logistical problems, right? So let's assume that... And that's just assuming that they started on it right away, which they wouldn't have been able to because there was a whole year of ramp up where they just didn't have resources and they're bringing people on board. And so they were doing little, like the card pack stuff, like that makes a lot of sense. Cause a card pack, you only have to worry about the designers. You don't have to worry about any of the production side. Right. Cause cardboard is easy. Right. Relatively easy.
It'd be curious. I think it's one of those where if the studio doesn't have much time to dedicate to it. So if they could sit down for a day every 3 months and go, we're going to work this out. This is what we're getting rid of. This is what we're bringing in. These are some cool abilities. And then you come back to it like for 30 minutes a week just to hash the abilities out and make sure that it's okay. But I don't know how any of this design process works.
I don't even think they have, like, I don't even, like, some people are thinking that, you know, they have their, they're dedicating the minimum time to X-Wing. I actually think they're dedicating a lot of time to X-Wing. But the problem is that the production moves so slowly, we don't see any of that value, right? Like we can't know. We only know if it's worse, right? Because if they stop putting effort in and then we see it fall off, sorry, Armada guys, right? Like we don't see how bad it could be for X-Wing, because like I really do think, and it's so heartbreaking, because I like, you know, recently we saw, you know, there was like AMG had to like call back and say like, hey, like death threats are not okay, right? Like, and I don't know what our community was doing, but I know that when they get vitriolic, it's bad, right? And so
it goes down a bad pathway. But I think I know that we said we're relatively small, but there is a lot of people at this point, and there's a lot of people, and therefore the internet.
Yeah. It's like, a small pond, but we are a big fish in there, right?
Yeah. Well, it is cool to see. I mean, let's just check in on the AMG bit right now, and you go to role selection.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Legion and X-Wing are pretty much neck and neck, sitting at almost 17,000, and Chatpoint is 1750. With, I mean, Crisis Protocol is the second smallest, with Armada almost hitting 1,000.
Yeah. So you want to think of like something really wild about this, right? So that's the role selection, right? But if you look at the server rules, because you have to accept the server rules to, so that's the total number of people in the server, right? So, that means that it X people who play X-Wing is 80% of the people who like are paying attention to AMG, right?
They're interested enough to have hit the button and said, I would like to know about this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Which
And they're
means that,
active
like, you
enough
know,
to be in the Discord as well.
so it's really it's would be really crazy for AMG to alienate 80% of their user base. You know what I mean? Like that would make no sense to me, right? So it's like when you really think about it, when you really like dig into it, and you try to break down what's going on, like, and whenever I see someone like complaining that AMG doesn't care about X-Wing or whatever, I think that like this is just wild thinking, because like if you actually take a time to look at any of the details, you will quickly realize that like, oh no, they're probably doing the best they can. They probably really care about X-Wing a lot, but
This is like the company itself, like, and this is why I think just about how much time they have, and like the size of their studio, because imagine being what I can only assume is a relatively poorly paid job, because if you're a games designer, then again, you're not doing it for the money. You're sitting there and you have this big multi-billion corporation sitting on your head going, to see this game that we outsold Warhammer for like 2 months, you need to make this work along with all of the rest of your things. And that's gotta suck. That's really gotta suck. So I feel for them. I
I
do
mean,
feel
maybe
for
it
them.
sucks, but maybe it's also like I don't know, like, so if I was Will Schick, right? I think I would be terrified and excited at the same time, right? Because it's like, yeah, like, okay, we just what the workload that we have for MCP, we're just gonna quadruple it. Yeah, sure, no problem. But then like I get access to Star Wars, right? Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, and also like, it's like, oh, well, let me not have to develop four miniatures games, but have a bunch of different types of properties, so I can like creatively like, jump into each one, right? So like there is like a bit of an allure to that, like being able to jump in. Of course, it's still 4x workload, right? Which is like the scary part, right? But that's what I mean. Like, I would be elated and scared, right?
I agree. I think there's one thing that AMG need to do. Just one. They need to hire themselves a social media manager.
I
And
think.
they need to ban the designers from talking to the internet. Just go through the social media person.
I don't know if they need to ban the designers from talking, but
They
they
don't need to ban them from talking. They
definitely
just need to have someone in the middle.
need someone to filter. That's what they need, right? They need someone. So like I think the problem right now is that head of studio is also deciding the media strategy. And I don't know that for sure, because obviously I don't know anything about the back end of what AMD is doing, but I think that's what's happening. And they really do need a professional, like whose job it is just to do social media and just to do like engagement stuff, to kind of like set the strategy and set the terms. Because having head of studio, having Will Schick, having Plummer talk to community, I think it's actually really good. The problem is they're not being given direction of what is good to talk about, what is not good to talk about, like what you can expect, what are strategies involved, like how do you engage community in X, Y, and Z, what are the benefits. Like someone who's like in the space who is specifically focused on that role would know these things and would be able to give them the heads up so they don't fall into the pitfalls that they've fallen into, right? And then like it's someone to also run everything through, like the recent kerfuffle they had with the tournament limits, right? If they had someone specifically whose job it was just to manage community and like run everything through this filter so that I can go and like, well, not me, but the community manager, I as a community manager would go and be like, okay, this is how the community is going to react to it, so let's word it like this so we don't get any blowback, right?
And
And
just go
then
like,
that community manager can do the follow-up work too. Follow-up work is super important, right? To be able to be a follow-up. No, it's not like this. No, you need to hit 16. Like blah, 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 blah. Like, so that there is no ambiguity, because X-Wing, well, communities in general, but X-Wing especially, because we've been trained to it because of the rules documents, really good at jumping to conclusions, right? Like,
It's worded this way.
we have to interpret the rules, so we got to jump to conclusions. We have no choice. Who
Hey,
knows how many months before we get a
I have
ruling?
had like a 2-hour discussion yesterday about like Leia triggering LOASD and like, but is it white and then blue or is it still white? We've been going around in circles. Wait. And I think Maui needs a hug.
Wait, that's not that complicated.
You'd think so, but it's not blue. It stays white.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, I don't.
Right. But I no matter how many times I say it, it keeps
because it doesn't
back.
Say reduce a difficulty. It just says treat as white.
It just says treat as white. So you can either reduce it to white or treat it.
It
as
could have
white,
been blue to start, white. And then it would be treated as white, right?
Yeah.
I believe it says May, right? It doesn't say May.
It's fine. We're going round in circles.
I love those rules.
It's things like that.
This is like a weird. This is like a weird like hobby of mine. So when I was younger, I thought I was going to be a lawyer because I loved rules questions. I love them. Like when I was playing card games, I loved rules questions. I love like breaking down a sentence and being like, well, this is how you apply each part of the sentence to the rules, right?
It's fun.
Yeah, it is. And the people who like get all rules lawyery, or people who don't like people who get rules lawyery, don't understand the game that's being played when you do rules lawyering. Is it like...
Yeah, it's... I just want to be clear, like, what is exactly going on here? This means this, this means this, this means this, this means this. Cool. Now we can play by the rules and have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. But even like interpretation, right? Like sometimes it's like really, it's really good. It's really feels really good when you can take an ambiguous rule and discern the rules and then apply it to an ambiguous situation, right? And you're like, aha, I've Sherlock, I've solved it. I know exactly what's happening here. Maybe it's just a feeling of superiority to like know like I bested the rules writer, but like you know
Well, it's if we go back to Rey and Holdo and stuff, then that's a fun little combination.
Oh boy, there have been some really, you know, it's actually funny. So Chris is obviously our first guest of the podcast, and I was just talking to Chris today, and we were talking about some rule stuff that, you know, he was explaining to me, and you know, this is clearly well described, like because I was basically making a joke that, oh, this seems like a situation where the rules cabal came up with an answer and AMG or an FFG backed it, and then no one thought to codify it in the actual rules doc, right? And just became part of lore vernacular, right? So anyone who's only been playing since AMG took over or since 2.5, oh boy. You guys do not know how good you guys have it with the rules forum and stuff like that. It used to be a black box where we would wait for the rules reference to come out, and then we would hope that it would solve our questions, and it would just oftentimes create more questions.
Well, if you go back to 1.0 as well, you had to literally wait for the next card pack to come out because they didn't fix cards.
Yeah, like, that's right.
Auto thrusters existed, and sorry, turrets, you just sucked for like 6 months.
Well, not only that, but like... this is before my time because I started playing when the episode 7 pack came out, the starter pack came out. That's how I started playing X-Wing too. It's like I was looking for a T-70 model and it was just the nicest one.
Because
smaller is cooler for some reason when it comes to models.
It can sit on your desk and it's great, and they're really detailed as well.
Yes, extremely. And these ones weren't articulating at the time, but sorry, that's a sidebar. So when before my time was the whole thing around what's it called? The Whisper, the Thai Whisper. Right? No, not Whisper, sorry, not the Thai Whisper. That's the Thai Phantom. And the used to just be broken. It used to literally just not work good.
So for those people who hate supernatural reflexes and living in a world where you never really had to play against supernatural reflexes because the designers for 2.5 hate that card and they hate being able to play with perfect information. Imagine a world where your I6, because at the time Whisper was I6. So you had an I6 Phantom, and before you activate, you just get to go, okay, I can now decloak when I activate. And I can decloak in any of the three directions, so two straight, two left, or two right, like a super barrel roll, effectively. So if you ever played against Poe with the super barrel roll shenanigans, imagine playing against Poe that before he activates, he can just do one of his boost or barrel rolls.
Free errata BB-8.
And then,
pre-errata BB-8, infinite charges, and also if you didn't use it, you were cloaked.
When you shoot, you get to just poof back to being cloaked.
Yes.
So if you didn't shoot, if you weren't initiative 6, you couldn't shoot Whisper without shooting the 4 dice defense.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just dumb. Why did it exist?
Like, think about that. Like, let's translate it for 2.5 players. Okay, double stealth device.
Yep.
Double stealth device. You can BB-8 infinitely pre-errata with overdrive active. With overdrive active. And then didn't he also
And it had a ghost primary, it had a 4 dice primary.
And also it's HLC all the time.
HLC all the time. With a crew that allowed it was Rebel Captive crew as well. So every time you shot the ship, you got a stress.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
There's no analog for that now, because they just removed it from the game because it was so dumb.
It was so stupid. But yeah, every time you shot the Phantom, you also got a stress. So
yes. And the only way to counter that was Dash, right?
No, it was Han. But yeah, you could use Dash or you could use Han. Dash normally got destroyed because Whisper just sat in the bubble and never left.
Yes.
But because Han had the 360 turret, couldn't get close to Han. So Whisper kills TIE Swarms. TIE Swarms killed Han. Han killed Whisper. And about 6 months, you just had a merry-go-round of you bring one of these things to a tournament.
Kind of like paper, scissors.
But
Well,
I mean, Han is... Han plus Jousters.
So here's the thing, right?
Hmm.
Let's talk about the meta, like, post segment. So, and you know, this is a good time to actually do the segment bit. So this is the bit that I do in the middle of every episode. Ollie doesn't know about it yet. We're a couple episodes in, but he hasn't seen the first episode yet. So, because we pre-record these. So, basically we do a thing in the middle, just kind of like segment the two things apart. It's the ad read. So, this episode has been brought to you by Elements, of whom Ollie is an official spokesperson for, not actually a real sponsor, but please buy their products. Maybe. I don't know. They're good, right? Are they good?
I really like them. Like, they do super nice clothes. Their backpacks are awesome. And if you're into skating, then they do some really nice Star Wars shoes. Yeah. Like, you can buy like the DC Star Wars shoes from Element.
Links will not be in the description because they're not actually a spot. They need to pay me. This podcast is also brought to you by Cafe Stores. Please go visit your local store and drink a coffee and play X-Wing there. Please do that. That's really important.
Support your friendly local game store.
Yes. This podcast is also brought to you by the TIE Phantom, which was all sorts of broken for a really way longer than it should have been.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was pretty broken at 2019 Worlds as well. That was a busted ship. Yes. Massive census. It's a bit too good.
And this podcast is also brought to you by broken ships, because sometimes a ship just doesn't work. And you need to bring it back to the drawing board. Jumpmasters, I'm looking at you.
I like 1.0 Jumpmaster is what is it? Is it the Jumpmaster? Is the Jumpmaster the most broken game in most broken ship?
No, Whisper is still the most broken. Like the TIE Phantom is still the most broken thing, like at launch. But
yeah, that's fair.
So okay, well, here's the way to describe it. Would you rather see across from you triple jumps in the original form or original Whisper Echo?
I would love. So the problem is I'm biased. I really enjoyed wiping smiles off people's faces by beating triple jumps. So I played a stream game against someone. So, but you know, Vader Defender.
Yeah.
Before Vader Defender got released, everyone was panicking that supernatural reflexes would be allowed on Vader Defender, because we didn't know anything about the fact that he couldn't spend force points on things that weren't for attacks. So I did a fun stream game on my stream against the supernatural reflexes Vader and his TIE fighter friends. I've going back off tangent for a second.
Wait, before you go off your tangent, do you have any ads that you want? Do you want any ad bits that you want to do?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, shout definite ad read for the 186 Squadron, who is still definitely the best squadron in England, no matter what the people up north say. I also, everyone should definitely go and buy a ticket to the UKTC, even if you're from America. And the same thing goes for, on a definitely serious note, as we already have a couple of people from across the pond committed to traveling. Sith Takers in February. It's going to be the last big tournament before Worlds. Good opportunity for practice. And we'd love to see you there. That's in Manchester. You may not make it back alive because it's in Manchester. And I don't go north of London very often. It's cold up there. There'll be monsters.
So I hate this because you found the loophole in my bit, which is if you can't make up any sponsors, just add your own sponsors, like legit sponsors. Yeah. I don't like this. Yeah. This is supposed to be a funny segment, and you've turned into a serious thing. I mean, yes, you should 100% go do those things.
You should also go and check out the Toronto Maple Leafs because I love ice hockey.
No, you shouldn't. They don't win. It's fine.
They're winding people up. They made it through the first round of the playoffs.
You know how much of a big deal that was, making it to the first round of the playoffs.
I know. I've literally just got back into ice hockey, which is great. I've started playing inline hockey again because England doesn't have enough ice rinks. But I'm a Rangers supporter because my wife went to New York and bought me back a jersey, so now I'm a Rangers supporter.
Isn't that how it works? That's how it works, right?
That is how it works.
There's a story. So I think this is a Gary Vaynerchuk story, but he says that what happens is when he emigrated to New York, someone basically says, like, who's your football team? Someone said to him when he was like very young, and he's like, I don't know what's football. And he's like, well, you're a Jets fan now. And then she's just been a Jets fan since.
That's how it happens. I was almost a Wild fan because the very first game of ice hockey I managed to watch in person was in Minnesota because of the FMP Center.
Sure.
So, I went to St. Paul. I've now watched two Wild games and one Chicago Blackhawks game, which is quite possibly the most depressing game of ice hockey that I've watched because it was this season versus the Canucks. And ooh. Oh, God.
Like, that feels bad.
I know that all of those players are much better than I am, but also,
Wow. Okay, sorry. So you're getting on your tangent about defeating like overbroken stuff.
I had to play many, many games against Supernatural Reflexes Guri. Because Phil GC loves Guri and loves Supernatural Reflexes. So I'm kind of used to the whole advanced sensors thing. I loved playing against Phantoms. It was one of the most fun games that I have. But the flip side of that is I'm definitely biased because I tend to fly lists that are able to take them on. I'm like Highness to ships. I like aces. So it was very much a, we're going to have a think about the game. We're going to outthink each other. And if I don't do that, then you're going to win the game because you deserve it, which is great. But if I manage to outthink you and shut off all your options and block your possible decloak options, before you've made them, then I can win the game, and therefore I've outthought you, and that's fun for me.
Right. The TIE Phantom is the worst ship that you want to play against. Because
I love the Phantom. I would love to play against it, and the Jumpmaster can go to hell.
Okay. This actually leads to a really interesting thing that I want to talk about today, which is because we're talking about aces, right? Because and you're unabashed ace player. Right.
Oh yeah. That's all I do.
You hardcore ace. You ace like there's no acing to be done outside of the ace.
Not as much as I used to, unfortunately. But I would like to go back to proper acing, and I'm not allowed.
Well, so here's my thing. So I have a hot take. I have a hot take thought that I've been kind of percolating in the background for the last couple of weeks, right? And so I fly. I don't know if you know what my current list is, but I've been flying. Well, I hilariously, almost to a point of memes now, fly BB-8 Poe, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so my current list is undefeated in tournament play. So not like casual, like in tournament play. I've not lost. Played in two tournaments. And then X-Ace brought it to one tournament, and he went 3-1, 3-0-1. So
that's good.
So like it's doing hilariously well in the meta. And I think this is a pure Aces list. It's BBA, Poe, Overdrive, HLC, Lone Wolf, and what was the thing? Baffle. And
I like that.
All the good stuff. So it's that BBA, Poe, Neon Numb with R4D6 and HLC.
And yep, then, pull in.
Yep. And then a pattern analyzer. And then Lulo with Predator shield upgrade. And then Kaz with Kaz stuff on it. Right? I think it's notorious Kaz.
Four ship.
Yep. But essentially, this is a three ace list, in my opinion. Mm. The way that I fly it is a three ace list. And the way it feels is like a 2.0 aces list. And the reason is because BBA Poe basically feels like Soonterfell in turn three or four, in turn two.
Yeah.
Right? So I have, like, the problem, what's the problem with aces, right? You don't have enough time to set up, right?
Yes.
Right? So what does BBA Poe let me do? It lets me set up turn one, two.
Boost, four forward, off we go. Yeah.
Well, no, four forward, five forward.
Yeah, sorry, because the extra.
You can boost or focus into the five forward, right? So you can literally be on the other side of the board turn one if you want. Or you can be into the upper quarter of the board if you boost first, right? And if you don't end in, you can also decide to, like, stay on your side of the board, right? So
this is super interesting. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, So the way that I've been flying it is, it just actually just feels like a traditional aces list, because I set up one chip to be a hard flank, which hits like a truck. So the caveat here is that if you fly any sort of aces list in 2.5, it needs to have four dice on it that would double mods to punch, because the problem with 2.5 is, because everything is compressed, you have less time to do damage. It's not about the reposition, actually. It's less time to do effective damage. In 2.0, 1.0, you had more time because points were not being scored if you were not taking damage.
You could do one damage a turn, and that's fine. But now you have to blow up a ship a turn, otherwise you're going to lose the game.
Yes, or at least you need to be able to blow up within four turns, destroy two or three ships, right? So you need to have damage output to match your AC-ness. But if you have it, and, like, so this list has it because it's got the R4D6 HLC with Neon Numb. It's got the HLC from Poe, and Lulo. Honestly, if they can catch him. If they can catch him, they can kill him. But a lot of the times you can't catch him. You just can't catch him.
Yeah, and if you're spending all the time chasing Lulo, then it's good for you, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Right. That's like the least. That's like the least interesting. It's maybe the easiest ship to kill because, like, I have to, like, focus on not boosting and just focus every turn, I'm not potentially not doing damage. But the reality is, if you're doing that, then the rest of my list is going to focus down all your stuff, right?
Exactly.
So there's, like, so much play and counterplay that's built into it. And so for me, the way that this plays like a traditional aces list is turn zero is turn one, right? You basically got to set up what your turn one engagement looks like, right? Which, you know, you have a fair bit of control over because you can see how they're plucking their stuff off and you can kind of, like, set up things. And objectives actually really help that, because when the objectives get placed, you can kind of see how your opponent will set up the board.
You know where the flight paths are going to be because of where the objectives are.
Right. So you just have to set up your aces in a way that, like, naturally flanks. So you turn zero becomes turn one, turn two becomes turn three, and then turn three becomes turn four. And so now you're back into traditional acing, right? It requires a little bit of preamble, and then you need a ship that is hyper maneuverable to be able to get into places that normally you wouldn't be able to get there.
So this is super interesting because there's a couple of things here that really resonate, which is, first of all, the old three aces list is now a four aces list, where one of those aces is replaced by two that operate together, as you're saying.
Yeah.
And I was doing the same thing with Imperials for a little while because you had Vader, Suntir, and Variant. Like, I was flying Reaper and something. At the time, it was the Gideon TIE Fighter. That's what I took to Worlds. But as a four-ship list, it operated as the same principle, right? It's still a three-ship aces list.
Yeah.
But also, if you have a look at one of the other people who I think is making an aces list work effectively is Crispy. His FO four-ship that he took uses exactly the same principle as your Poe. in that it has the sensor scrambler blackout with the pre-boost. Mm-hmm. So it does decloak into a boost into a five straight, mm-hmm. and then the next turn it does the curve boost into the two or three bank and the barrel roll. And yeah, it's basically in your deployment zone halfway along the board at turn two. Mm-hmm. If you're not expecting it, then you just get like face punched by two whispers and blackout, and then there's one reg just sitting around lobbing mag pulses at things. It's mm-hmm. it's not very nice. But it's that kind of thing, right? Is this is why I would say that, and this is where your defining terms is interesting. Mm-hmm. because ace play for me used to be the whole dance that you get with setting up an engagement, and then you go away, you come back, you're trying to get on someone's tail. And you can still do that. You can still fly those aces that are capable of doing that. But I think that now only happens in the last couple of turns of the game. Or you're flying something with incredible maneuverability like BB-8 Poe, which allows you to do that on every turn. Mm-hmm. Because it feels like what you have to do is you have to, I'm going to use go into chess a little bit here, you have to simplify to allow those aces to work. So I would say a modern ace list is actually ace mini swarm is a much more effective way of doing it, because you have the mini swarm that smashes something and then dies. And then you finish off the game with your one or two aces, mm-hmm. which are flying around. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the list that I'm flying at the moment, which is Han, Hera, Boudica, and Luke, very much feels like that. It has the hammer, which is Luke with Boudica. You just will ram themselves up in your business. And then Han is actually the ace, which he's just zooming around doing his thing. Mm-hmm. Hera is supporting everything. And yeah, it's nice to fly a Falcon again, but it feels a little bit unbalanced. But it is possible. But again, I think I'd only view being able to play like an ace game with like the patience that you normally get in the last few turns of the game. I don't think you get that anymore in the first couple of turns of the game.
You need to try my Poe out and joust like four ships with it.
Oh yeah. This is like, I'm over here behind you.
I did the dream, by the way, in a game. The dream with this list is so he put three X-Wings in front of me. It's a 5X list. He put three X-Wings in front of me to joust, because it's like, okay, well, I'm going to bully this Poe away, right? And I was like, no. Four straight boost 5k.
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, sorry, not boost. Four boost. Four straight focus 5k talent 5k. Yeah. Right. And then I was lone wolf, so I had double mods, and I was literally behind his ship at range one.
With it, like, yeah, range one high.
Yeah. So it's ionized double stress, and then I baffled off one of the stress. So next turn, I just one straight focus. I'm good. I still have Lone Wolf active.
Yeah, like they don't care. You've got double mods, and you've got an HRC. It's fine.
Well, I've done four damage to his one because he does one from baffle, right? So it's like that is a good trade for me.
I think that's one thing I am sad about is the changes to Ion. I quite like the one straight Ion. I think the bank is too kind.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. But I think they did that because they intended to have, and it's been showing, more ways to ion, right?
That is true.
Because here's the thing, right? So ion does two things to the game that I think are positive, right? And one thing that which is negative, which is the, I agree. I prefer when it was just one straight. One banks does add a little bit too much agency for something that should be low agency, right? I do think it does two things that are really good. Having it so that it breaks locks now is extremely valuable, because it means that Ion has a value to the game outside of just like restricting movement, right? And that means that Ion is more valuable as a meta tool, not just as a way to because right before Ion was just a way to like hit on aces. It was just a way to like smack them down, right? And now it has value against Now it has value against aces. It has it has value against alpha. It has value against token lists, right? Like things that try to like double mod all the time. So it has a lot of like utility value now, which makes it so that you're more likely to use it, and then now that you're more likely to use it, ships are more likely to get ion, and then so then it makes sense. Like we can't just have them all going one straight all the time because that removes too much agency. But it ends up being a useful tool against taking a lot of things, their MPE out of the game. And you know what? Honestly, we have too much dice mods right now, anyways. There's way too many things that can get locks to share tokens, stuff like that. Having more stuff to remove tokens is kind of a good way to balance out, it's like play counterplay, right? And that's a list construction thing too, which is like good because if we're saying that, I don't know if I necessarily agree with it, but you know, if we're saying that list construction is become less diverse because of the loadout system, then giving more kind of like silver bullets that you can carry as a part of your loadout choice to make those like valuable list options as opposed to it being just one choice is also valuable, right? So the idea of like an ion cannon over something like an HLC is now a relevant choice because it might be that I need this or mag pulse over the obvious prockets, right?
Yeah, I'd like to see I'd really like to see a bit more play with loadout as a tool in list balancing. I mean, I'm gonna wave my stick around and go, I would like to see nerfs, please, because I think there are too many points on the table right now. It would be nice to go back to having three ship ace lists instead of four ship ace lists. And I know that that is viewed by a lot of people as taking away their fun, but I think it allows you to play more turns of the game because there's less things going on. There's less dice mods. There's less ships on the table.
Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to push back on that a little bit because I actually think four aces is fine. The problem isn't the number of aces. The problem is that there isn't enough time to let them breathe, right? Like, you just need more. So, part of that problem is that overall, there's too much damage on the board, right? So it would be fine if you could run four aces, right? If like those aces were all low damage dealing and stuff like that, and like there was
Like two
equivalent
less
damage,
guns
right?
or
So the I think the power scale might be just a little too high for traditional aces to fit. Or like let's have some of those aces. Like a three ace list could work if the aces all hit good, right? Right? Like if a Vader is 7 points, right? And you're gonna be like 7-6-6, I think, is it? Seven seven
Yes.
six? Right, to like
You
fit
want
three ships.
8, 8, 6, 6, yeah. 7, 7, 6, yeah.
7-7-6, right? That's the three ace like kind of like setup, right? So you need three ships in your faction that are basically three Vaders.
Yes.
It doesn't happen. There's no faction that has that right now, right?
Rebels can do it, but
But
yeah.
it's not aces, right?
But this they used to be able to do it just normally because you could do Hana 8. And then you have Hera and or Luke and Wedge.
Well,
Han Luke Wedge. That used to be 20 points.
And I think that so here's the thing, right? Here's how I feel. I think they're doing a really good job of like balancing out now the low end where the threes and the fours and the fives are getting to the point where we're kind of feeling like that five. So we're not spamming towards six and eight now. Like we're getting kind of a good mix of threes and fours to the point where like majority of the lists are like five ships or four ships, right? And so what they need to do now is they need to make that high end, the ships that are 6 points plus, more attractive so that like it is viable to bring a three ship list and have it perform because a three ship list the way it would need to survive because it's disadvantaged in two ways. The first way is that your coverage on the board is not as big. So one so each ship has to be able to work independently on its own for 7 points, right? So BBA Po is a great example of this because BBA Po can 100% operate independently the whole game, and it does everything that it needs to do by itself. It is equivalent of two to three ships of like value,
Yeah,
right?
it does everything. It's on target every turn
That's
and it will
right?
hit like a
And
truck, yeah.
it's really funny because like Rey also really good for that, and Falcon Poe also really good for that. They all three of them are they're correctedly point costed, right? They are worth 2 points of value. They are extremely high of a damage. They have the ability to
See,
do a lot of stuff, right?
that's interesting to me because I would very much push back against the idea that Rey and Poe, not Falcon Poe, but standard Poe, Rey and Poe being the same points is just astounding to me. Like how has that happened? because Rey is just a utter monster, especially a loud heroic. Like, there is both the damage that she can absorb and the output that Rey can give.
Yeah.
In so her present form,
here's the reason why I think Rey is okay at seven. So Rey hits like a truck, very, very high defensive power. You can burn her down. You can also block off her exit points. Right?
Yes. So she's easier to slow down. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a meta where you can kill ships at a fairly regular clip and you have high damage output in general, Rey at seven is fine because, yes, she hits like a truck and she's extremely good, but she's also a vulnerable point in your list where she can actually lose you points if they take you down, and more likely to happen than either Poe. Right?
True. It's very hard to get a tag on Poe. I think my biggest concern with it is, in terms of everything right now, is that, as you're saying, it's the damage output. And as much as I would love to see the damage output go down, I think the easiest solution to that is just increasing points across the board, because of the fact that, so say for example, let's keep it in resistance at the moment. Mm-hmm. You can run a 5-ship double modded resistance list so many different ways, but you five ships with 3-4 dice guns,
3x plus whatever.
Yeah. Consistent across the faction. And that will, like, anything that's in front of that will just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
But
part of the game is making sure that the whole list isn't in front of your ships, right? Like, the objectives help with that, and, like, you know, good flying helps with that. And we haven't seen any of these 5x lists dominating the scene. They do well, but they haven't won any events yet, right? And part of that is because it's a good solid list. Is it the S tier list that is going to drive? I don't know. Is it emblematic of the problem? Yeah, probably, like, in terms of overall damage, right? But you got to understand, like, the game isn't about pure raw damage anymore, right?
No, but does it prevent a lot of other things from existing?
You're thinking of it like triple defenders, right?
Yeah, like, just because that list exists and because it's a reasonable force in the meta, you cannot fly certain things. And basically any big ship that exists that would be interesting. Like, look at Dash coming out, and like, there's some fun things that you can do with Dash. But as soon as you put Dash on the table and you come up against either a Han or that 5-ship resistance beef, I'm fairly sure he's toasted. And obviously there's player skill and that and everything else, but it's stopping new things from, yeah, I just, it's not, and I've picked that one out of the air because it was a good example of the power creep that's happened. If you go back to the start of X-Wing itself, the idea of having 5 double modded shots, like, think about the first X-Wing list that we had right at the start of 1.0. You could fit Wedge, Biggs, 2 Red Squadron X-Wings. All of them were single modded. If you wanted a double modded shot, you had to take a target lock and then not use it and use it on the next turn.
5x wasn't even a thing until the end of 1.0, right?
Yeah, like, exactly.
You couldn't even fit it until the end of 1.0.
Yeah, so right. we are so far down the line in terms of power creep from 1.0.
Sure.
I feel like allow games to last for more than 5 or 6 turns would be my view.
So you think a point increase across the board for all ships to basically drive down the ship costs, driving the ship counts to 1 ship less, you know, per faction was the solution?
That would be my aim, because I think in terms of problems I'm looking to solve, because it's the problem I'm looking to solve isn't the fact that we have that many ships, because I think it's great fun. I'm like, personally, I'm enjoying the list that I can fly right now. But I think in terms of making the game to be a better place, I think the games should be faster turns, less stuff going on. And that's an easy solution, just to reduce the amount of ships on the table. Also, I think it would be nice to have more different parts of the game. So you have a proper planning phase and so not planning phase, a proper like deployment phase in turn one. You have a proper mid game, you have a proper end game. Mm-hmm. Whereas right now you just kind of have joust each other, furball, scramble for points to win the game. And there, like a lot of games that people play will have those parts, but I think in general across the board, there isn't enough of that separation. And I think allowing more turns in the game allows more different styles of play to happen. It would also allow something like a TIE Swarm and a Droid Swarm to come back, because we haven't seen those because they're just out efficiencied by the big beefy boys. Because what's the point of bringing 8 TIE Fighters when you can have 5 T-70s? It doesn't match up. TIE Fighters are now so cheap that you can't take them anymore, because 2 points isn't enough for a TIE Fighter. It needs to be 1.5, and you need to be able to fly. Basically, they needed to make to reduce the, with the amount of ships you can fly right now, they needed to get rid of the hard cap of 8 ships for a TIE Swarm. If you could fly a 10-ship TIE Swarm, then you'd see TIE Swarms again, because everyone would just take 10 TIEs.
Do we want to increase or remove the cap? Would that be,
I mean, it depends.
That's an interesting thought.
It depends what view you want to take, right? Like, if my view is I think we should nerf things.
Reduce, because I think it's better the other for the operation solution, of the game, right?
Right, but the other solution is you just go, screw it. Let's make everything broken and just remove the ship cap.
So for the record, I think that I agree with your premise that the solution to the various problems that you've outlined is reducing the total ship count. That being said, I actually, same as you, I actually really like this meta in terms of ship counts, because I think it's very fun for to be flying 4 and 5 ship. Basically, no one's flying ships of 3 ship lists, and no one's flying 6 ship lists at this point, right? It's all 4 and 5.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good number. I think that's a really healthy number, right? So I don't necessarily have a problem on a gameplay perspective with 4 and 5, but solving the specific problems that you have, yeah, I agree that it makes sense that the natural solution to that is to just go from 5 to 4 and 4 to 3, right? But honestly, like, opening the idea of 10 ship lists, 11, or even like 11 ship lists, right? That's very interesting. That's super interesting.
Curious. Like, because it would, because at the moment no one's flying droids or TIEs because they can't compete, but
yes,
you could allow them.
But
to.
What if you could just add 2 more, right? Mm-hmm. That's a very, very interesting idea.
What if you could have 8 TIE fighters and your 4-point support ship?
Yeah.
In a 9 ship list.
I think
runner and 8 TIEs.
Yeah. Like, I think that's a super interesting, and I don't think it changes the balance of the game that dramatically in the current balance, right?
No, because it's in line with the current power creep, so it would be okay.
Just feel natural.
Like, I'd love to see a 10 droid swarm on the other side of the board. I think that'd be really cool.
And I think that, like, I think the answer to, well, what if, like, oh, how do I fly TIE Swarm 2.5? Well, if you have 2 more ships, they can just hold the objective. You can run your 8 TIE Swarm into the board, right?
Why can't I hold all of these TIE Fighters? Like, yeah.
Give me all the things. I actually super like that idea. I think they should do one of those 2 things. They should either reduce the cost or so here's the thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
One of those 2 things is really easy.
Yep.
One of those 2 things,
and one of them is really hard. But I think I've accepted the facts, and this is why I tend to I've actively avoided getting into game design discussions since AMG has taken over, because not what they're doing is against what I would do, which isn't a bad thing, right? They have a good vision for the game, and they're following that vision. I would define what the present vision of the game is very similar to League of Legends, which is where if everything is broken, nothing is broken. Mm-hmm. You hit the stuff that is ridiculous with a nerf bat, but you just keep on making things better, and that's fine because everyone gets to have fun with their toys.
Okay, so I'm gonna put my game designer hat on, and I am gonna speak as if like that, because it's like I can officially say that that's my job, but I think, so what I've seen them do, and I'm encouraged by what I've seen, because I obviously don't know what's going on behind closed doors, right? But what I have seen is, and I think this is our strategy, right? I'm going to outline it. So this last big points update, they did a lot of really interesting things that I'm very excited about. The first thing they did is they moved the points around in a way that makes logical sense for what they want to have thematically each point do. So a good example of this is Rebels. In Rebels, some X-Wings are four and some X-Wings are five. The X-Wings that are four cannot take proton torpedoes at all. They
Yes.
sometimes they can't even take torpedoes, right? So they made all of the ones that are four basically not have torpedoes, and the ones that are five can take torpedoes. And then, like, for example, Wedge, who is a problem with a proton torpedo, they just said, like, well, you just have a missile. And now we can bring your point cost down because now you're not tethered to that specific issue, right? So they're reassigning the point to the overall point cost to how they envision the ship to be like in the squad layout. So basically, they're saying, okay, we're gonna wanna put all the ships, the constructions of the list are gonna be X, Y, and Z, right? And what I'm hoping is, and because they've done that, they've like also adjusted all the loadouts. They did one initial pass on all the loadouts to be like, okay, well, if the cost points are this, then loadouts can be around this, right? And I think what they should do is, if in the next point balance, it should be another big point balance, but taking the information that they pull in now is to not adjust any point costs, but adjust all the loadout values down, right? So now,
Yeah,
if you can't
that's
take,
I'd like to see that.
right? Because now, like, we're saying, okay, well, if this ship is supposed to cost 4 points, this is what it's supposed to cost, let's bring the power level in line with what that ship could cost, right? And now we're
Yes.
going to adjust the point values to the loadout values to match that, right? But it also means, like, okay, well, if we want like a ship like Poe, right, which is 7 points, it should have a ton of loadout because it's got to
Yeah,
output 7 points worth of value,
give it
right?
toys.
Right. And so, like, something like Han, right? Like, so you could do two things. Well, okay, so there's two discussions. We'll get to that, the Bistand thing, because that is a discussion, right? But
Yes.
if we want Han to cost 7 or 8 points, like, I think Han should cost 8 points, first of all, because I think that it shouldn't cost the same as the BOI Han.
Yes.
And I think it would be totally fine at 8 points. Just give it more loadout. It can be very good value and it would be very good, right? But if you're going to keep it at seven, then Bistand needs to go. Because I think
I agree.
Bistand is a problem. Just
It
Bistand is
is
a
a
problem.
problem. It's just double tapping. Double tapping like that is an issue. Double tapping so accurately is a massive issue. And again, Bistan existed at 8 points on Han, and no one was really taking it. It wasn't broken. The issue is that if you want Han at seven, you cannot have Bistan. Any Falcon that is 7 points and is
I agree with
able to
that.
get double mods, you can't have
I
Bistan.
agree with that. And I also think that the Han should be, I think that the Han that we have that's customizable should be an expensively loadouted
Yeah,
pawn. So it should be eight
give him
points,
poise.
right? We have a thematic Han at seven that is like kind of efficient and it's not broken. It's good. Like, that's a good Han. People are not taking it because the customizable one is so
It's
undervalued.
presently 6 points, and no one is taking it.
Is it 6 points? I thought it was seven.
I thought it was
I'm
six.
gonna open my builder and we're gonna verify this right now because
But I mean,
I.
if we look at big ships that are six that are comparable, you've got the Ghost and you've got the Gauntlet at 6 points,
Boy-Han
which
is the same cost as
no, it is the same
Chewbacca.
point. Yeah, well, there's no point. I
There's no
would take
reason.
every single other Falcon, apart from Chewie. I would take every single other Falcon over Boy Han
Well, they're
if
all
they're the same
seven.
points.
They're all seven on Rebels, right?
Leia's amazing, Lando's amazing, Han is stupid, like they're great.
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, Boy-Han is good too, actually.
Oh yeah, I agree with that.
It's
I agree
actually
with that.
like
But
really solid. And also
he's
really
a
solid
good
with
ship.
like It works really well with like high, well, Bartosz took it to Worlds and got top four, right? So like it's really good with high ship counts, right? Because like you could do addition all this additional value. You don't really want to block the Han shot, even though it's just a three dice gun with like a little bit of a soft reroll, right? So like you don't really want to block this shot because it's not a high quality shot. But if you don't block it, some other ship is going to get a double modded chop down the road, and it's like you don't want that. So you got to waste your tokens blocking against this kind of crap shot, and then the rest of your ships are just getting value off of that, right?
Realistically, I think the what Bartosz is really good at doing is he's really good at building lists with a good gimmick in it that people haven't seen. And from what I was looking at, a lot of his games were being won because people were just like, oh, I'm not going to block that shot because I'll just take a damage and it'll be fine, not spotting the fact that he could then go, okay, so now we boost into a proton rocket that's double modded, mm-hmm. which was, it was beautiful and terrifying mm-hmm. at the same time. But, yes. but yeah, also that man shouldn't be allowed near an A-wing. He's too good with them. And all of his lists are just carried by the fact that he is somehow managing to get A-wings in places that they never should be able to exist.
I don't agree with that at all. I think that that's like saying you shouldn't be allowed to fly Sinterfell.
Yeah, but it is because
you shouldn't in that last meta, you should not have been able to take Sinterfell to as well as far as you did, right? By all intents and purposes,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that is fair. I like saying it.
This is like when a player flies one ship extremely well, right? Mm. That's like kind of the essence of their playstyle, right? Like
yeah.
it's what allows players to set themselves apart at high level, right? Like I always attribute it to, I don't know if you follow any Street Fighter fight stuff, right?
I don't follow players, but I know enough about it.
Right. But you know Daigo the Beast, right? Yeah. I think everybody knows him who follows the Street Fighter scene a little bit, right? For everyone who's listening, Daigo is basically one of the greatest of all time in Street Fighter. He's a legendary player. He is most known for playing Ryu Ken, right? And Ryu is his fighter of choice. Although he will, to be competitive, he will play whatever most closely with that playstyle. So in the midst of Street Fighter V, he said, "I'm not going to win games, but I want to play more games as Ryu, because that is my style." Right. And he just wanted to focus on that. And I think that that's like that really resonated with me, because that's like bringing it back to X-Wing. That is like a really good thing for players to like fly at a super high level, fly the ships that they like, and then do exceptionally well with them, outperforming their normal, what the ship's on paper performance says, because you just understand it better. Right. Because like, look, a normal player brings four A-Wings and Boy Han to a tournament. I don't think he's going to make top four at Worlds, right? No. Bartosz does it, and it's like, of course he was going to make it. Like who
every could've... time. And he did exactly the same thing at Birmingham as well.
Yeah.
I still don't think that five-ship Han list is the best version. Yeah. But he is so good with both Wedge and Keo. Like, watching the final against Martin, I was just like, it's phenomenal. It's just super, super good.
Giving Bartosz Keo was probably not a good idea.
It's a really good ship. It goes sideways.
Yeah.
But I, harking back to that point a little bit, it's something that I think I made my first breakthrough essentially mm-hmm. with the game when I realized it, because I originally was a Rebel pilot. That was it. I was a single faction player, which was Rebels. I know everyone mm-hmm. thinks that I am in love with Imperials and Suntir. But my first love was Jake Farrell mm-hmm. in 1.0, because he operated exactly in the same way as Suntir Fell. He had proton rockets, so I had the five dice smash. But what I've realized a little way down the line when I started getting better at the game is that I didn't like a faction, I liked a playstyle. And what I've done since then is whenever there's been a points update or anything else, I've had a look at all the different factions and I've gone, okay, what will best enable me to play that style? And if you go back to 2.0, there was Rey and Poe, which was amazing as a two ship list. And that worked really well. Obviously you had the three ship Imperial Aces. You had the stupid Suntir that I took to this year's Worlds. Mm-hmm. Which works, and the style that I basically identified worked. that I like playing.
Yeah.
You have to have something that can, it avoids things and then it dives and does spike damage, and then is able to get out and keep hold of its points. Mm-hmm. So you evaporate something, you go away, you come back and you do it again. It's kind of like just jumping on a thing, and then going away again. And that's the style that I love to play. And I think if I'd have taken a bit more time in this present meta and not just gone, well, Han is stupid good, so I should fly him. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be interesting to see what faction I would have flown. It's not Imperials I might have flown a slightly different rebel list, but I would also be really curious about Resistance and Republic right now.
You should. Okay, here, you know what? I'm gonna send you my list after this cast. You should put it on the board. I think you're gonna super like it. I'm not just doing this because I'm evangelical about BB-8 Poe. I legitimately think that you're gonna have a great time with it.
It was the most fun I've ever had playing any ship in the game ever. Just straight hands up. Overdrive Poe is nonsense, and I love him.
The synergy of this list is actually extremely good, and I would love to walk you through some of the cool stuff that I find with this list. But I will say, Empire, from an Aces perspective, has become very disappointing because they've removed a lot of the things that make Imperial Aces really good. Because Vader has every single points update has become more and more a hammer and less an ace. If to the point where I don't even think you need afterburners anymore. It's just not
No.
necessary. Like he has
He just
it,
goes forward and
but
murders things.
yeah, like he has it and it's a good utility piece. But if you took, like on the standardized card, if you took afterburners off, Vader would fight almost exactly the same. Like he would basically not fly any different, right? You'd be a little less effective because you couldn't boost into range one and they get the target lock, but you can still take a range two shot and get three dice no matter what anyways,
Yeah,
right?
and he just gets 3 hits every turn.
Exactly, right? So like and so a lot of the things that made and it, I'm not completing my sentences, Beard. It's such a frustrating thing that I can't enunciate the words properly. But basically, everything that is good about the Aces meta in Empire is all at the I4 level, which is just not good because that's not where you want the ace stuff to be. Like a lot of the TIE Interceptors, the good stuff set four, all the Sigma stuff, if they weren't I4, they would be incredible. Second Sister is an I4. Iden TIE Interceptor is an I4.
There's so much fun stuff.
There's
There is so
tons of
much
fun
fun
stuff. It's
stuff.
just all like middle initiative, which is not good for the things that it does, right?
So there is a thing that I am very curious about, and I really, really want to play. And this is I put it in the builder a couple of days ago because I'm looking at okay, once I've because next weekend is our London qualifier. And that's I'm hoping if I can win it and if I can get a flight, then I can come back to Worlds this year, which would be great. But after that, I am super excited to put on the table because it, and I'm not entirely sure what the fifth ship is. Sorry, what the sixth ship is, but you can put five A-wings in a list for 15 points. And they're
You know,
really good.
it's okay. You know what's fun, really funny about this? This is Rebels, right?
Yeah, this is Rebels.
So what's really funny is So Kratz, I don't know what his real name is. He asked he so he said he wasn't playing the game anymore. And he's like, I'm mad because I can't play five Rebels anymore. FFG took away my five Rebels. And I literally respond to that with a list that was five A-wings and Luke.
Yeah, that's what I've got at the builder at the moment, but I feel like there could be something better
Oh,
than
there's
Luke. I mean,
definitely
I could do
something that
six
you could
A-wings and
do.
do Ahsoka, but
No, 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 no. Five A-wings and Luke. Well, personally, I think that's the thing because Luke is just undercosted at five. But like, I gave the list to him, and I'm like, here you go, five A-wings. Go have nuts. And then he went back and he said he played two games and he won both of them. And he's just, I'm just like, amazing. And like the one that I
Right.
have, the version I have is like four crack shots and like,
Yeah, that's the exact same one. Yeah, you just like Wedge Ahsoka, no, Wedge KO Sabine. Just there you go. Off
Derek, and then you just any A-wing, you just like say, and then I was like, and I shared that with another guy, and he's like, wow, that looks really cool. Like, but the thing is, you can also say like, okay, well, let me take if I degrade Sabine A-wing to TIE fighter, then
Sabine TIE Fighter. Yeah.
I can take the bad A-wing because there's one bad A-wing. I think it's Derek, and I can upgrade
Yep.
that to a better A-wing or a better X-wing, right?
Exactly,
And now it's
exactly.
like
Or if
3A,
you
like
want to, you can
2X,
change
like.
out Luke for a ghost.
Yeah, that sounds
So
disgusting.
you could have four A-wings, Sabine and Kallus.
That seems disgusting. Well, okay, so yes, that seems kind of disgusting. The problem here is that I think Ghost is not good anymore in the meta.
True. maybe Gauntlet. I mean, if you want to go spam, you can put Ezra with commandos.
If you want, well, the thing is, if you want to do like a low initiative, like big ship, Lebo, not a terrible choice.
That's not a bad shout.
Lebo, kind of solid, because it's like, oh, let me be Luke with proton torpedo, except I've got 4 extra health, and every I can turn. Shoot the proton torpedo every single turn, and I don't need a target lock to do it.
And I've got Notorious, because why not?
Notorious, and I've got I've got 2 arcs, not 1 arc, but 2 of them.
I mean, I'm curious. I like the Outrider model. I have one painted that may hit the table at some point. Yeah, so I like my A-wings. The one thing I do miss is that B-wings aren't a thing at the moment. I would love to get B-wings back.
You know what? I always want B-wings to be good all the time, and I'm also not mad that they aren't.
They're in Trash Sim jail.
You know, it's sad that B-wings had to catch strays for the crimes of Nim Miranda, but you know, it is what it is. It is what it is.
Yeah,
there's collateral damage in war. It just happens, you know.
If you give something a system slot and allow Trash Sim, then yeah, that's fair.
Right.
I think, unfortunately, I'm probably going to have to call this a night. It is 12:45 in the morning, and I do have work. But okay. I've really, really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we'll have you back on sometime soon. I think that we got to find a time slot where we can really go the full 3 hours, so you can beat Chris Allen's record. Yeah. Right? Like, you think that...
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I will. Like, that's both on pride and on the fact that I will just carry on talking.
You can't let Chris Allen win. That's not acceptable, right?
I mean, no. You have to. Like, we've got to build this whole, like, Chris is an asshole and I hate him. Again, just building these rivalries out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's... Oh, you wait till you see episode 2, which will be out by the time that this episode airs. I think you'll appreciate the rivalries that we're going to be building there.
So, does Paul say lots of mean things about me?
No, I say a lot of mean things about no, I don't say any mean things, but we build the rivalries. Okay, it's happening. I don't know that you're involved in the rivalries, but
Chris Allen sucks and Paul is definitely not the most world champion ever because I took his crown.
Right.
There you go. Clickbait.
So actually, do you think you're the superior player to Paul Heaver?
He's beat me on the head to head. I think it's something like 2-4 in his favor at the moment.
Oh no. Those are not good numbers. You gotta do something about those numbers, man.
I always enjoy playing him. It's been fun. We haven't had as many games since Vassal died, so
that's fair. But do you not play TTS that much?
I play TTS, but I haven't ended up because of the time differences. There's mm-hmm. some players that I get to play because they play earlier in the day. I think Paul plays later. Mm-hmm. Actually, in terms of players that I haven't played yet, mm-hmm. Duncan Howard and Paul Heaver are the two big American players that I haven't played on the table. I played against Paul a lot online, but because Duncan doesn't really play much online, I haven't played him. I have played Nathan Idy at both 2019 and 2022 Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And he beat me both times, though, the final dice roll of the game, which I was very sad about.
Can I ask you one last question before we end?
Go on.
2019 Worlds, 2022 Worlds, which one did you like more?
That's a really hard question.
That's why I asked
That's a really hard question. I really liked the space and the environment in 2019 Worlds. I thought that was phenomenal. I enjoyed the game more. And all of that. I thought 2022 Worlds was such a good... I'm going to use a Star Wars quote here. Rebellions are built on hope, etc. The whole Jyn Erso speech. Mm-hmm. That's what 2022 Worlds felt like. And it lost it a bit since then, but it's kind of coming back, and COVID was such a blow to the community. 2019 Worlds was a culmination of everything, and that was why it was so good. And like, it was a great time had by everyone. It was massive. I got to see all my friends, and that was great, but it wasn't as special as 2022 Worlds to see people after that huge break and see X-Wing properly going again. So I think Personally, obviously I'm biased. I really, really enjoyed 2019 Worlds. I think I got to enjoy 22 Worlds more because of that. So I had a better time at 22 Worlds personally, but I think I enjoyed 2019 overall because of the fact that it was, you win the thing and yada yada. But yeah, as yeah, I mean, it's apples and oranges. They were both amazing. And the World Championships, for anyone that gets the opportunity to go, is a really, really good experience, not for the worlds, but for the scene and the people there.
I think for the worlds too, though, actually. So my comment is that like I super liked the format of 2022 Worlds so much. It from a competitive standpoint, it was much more tenable and more viable to play in Worlds, play competitively, play seriously, and still have a good time afterwards. Because the problem with 2019 Worlds is that you could either play super competitively and not see anybody until the end of it, or not play competitively and have a good time, right?
I remember the 7 round day. That hurt. In fact, just before I disappear, I'm gonna go two things. One, if you're gonna have SOS as a tiebreaker, make X and one cuts, please, for the love of God, stop p kicking people out cuts on SOS. That's my personal gripe. Number two, going back to 2019 Worlds, I was so tired, I attempted to block Vader with an initiative. Sorry, I attempted to block an initiative ship for ship with Vader in my final round against Chris Little, and bless him, he took it really well when I diced him hard to win that game. So thank you, Chris Little, for being my tired buddy in round 7 of 2019 Worlds.
Yeah. I think the endurance factor is the one part, like I'm really happy. So, we were shitting on Chris Allen, but he's been largely responsible for removing a lot of those long days from the format.
As I say, I think Chris does a really good job with a lot of the decision he makes about tournament formats.
I'm not suggesting we don't shit on Chris.
Oh no, we 100% like Chris. You deserve to get shat on. You'll enjoy it.
Do you know about the racist story? It's really funny.
Save it for later. I gotta go.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're
All
just gonna
right.
carry on talking.
Well, let's wrap up then. Thank you everyone for listening. Any last shout outs you want to give before we end the podcast, Ollie?
To you, because I've been feeling really, really tired, and X-Wing has been genuinely tough to engage with for the last however long, because work's been tough and it felt like X-Wing was turning into a job. And I've really enjoyed chatting to you for 2 hours, so thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next time. Fly safe and be safe out there. Bye.